We're definitely a critical metals play with a big halo of gold around us. So if you're a gold bug, there's a lot of gold out here. But we're really trying to focus on critical metals, antimony and tungsten, simply because of the acute need domestically to develop domestic supplies of these critical metals, particularly given China's attitude towards putting export controls on things like antimony. They've got a, you know, we've relied on China for too long. 80% of the processing, for instance, of antimony is done in China. And when they shut down exports to the US, it creates, I don't want to say pandemonium, but there's acute awareness of this supply deficit. So there is a big push on it. It really is critical. And so we do play hard on that.
Good day, everyone. Steve Yang here, Natural Resource Stocks. I'm here with Craig Lindsay, CEO of U.S. Operations of Resolution Minerals. How are you, Craig?
I'm doing great, Steve. How are you?
Not bad. For those of us who don't know the story in your ticker and where you're trading, if you can start off by giving your website as well as where you're trading and where your tickers are.
Sure. We're Resolution Minerals Limited. We trade on the ASX, the Australian Stock Exchange, under the symbol RML. And we are also trade on the OTCQB market under RSMIY. That's an ADR program that we've got in place. A NASDAQ listing is pending in the next month or two, which is going to be exciting for us. And we are critical metals and we're gold. We're in Idaho. We're the Horse Heaven Project. It's a 15,000-acre project. We have 100% ownership interest in it. We've got a past producing tungsten mine, a past producing antimony mine, very high grade antimony, very large and growing gold endowment. And the thing that will kind of pique your listeners' interest is that we are directly adjacent to Perpetua Resources' Stibnite Gold Project, which is getting a lot of airplay domestically here because of both their gold and their antimony, their government support that they've got, and the fact that they've got a permitted mine that's going to be in production in 3 years.
Craig, lots to talk about. If you can give me an update on the Golden Gate. I mean, earlier this year, I believe you announced a significant discovery there. Could you talk about what you're seeing? What's the potential scale of the system? What are the biggest unknowns?
Sure. Well, so when you think of Golden Gate, I want you guys to think about three things: gold, tungsten, and antimony. And it's 15,000 acres. We've got two primary targets that we're developing. One is Antimony Ridge, which is antimony. And then a second target is something called Golden Gate. Golden Gate is gold and it's tungsten. It's a project or a target that's about 3 kilometers long. We drilled it last year. We put about 14 holes down late last summer after we acquired the project. Got some spectacular, 250 meter plus intercepts of gold from the surface right down to the bottom of the hole, ending an open-ended mineralization. So this year, we've just started May 1st, a 45,000 foot drill program. We've got about four holes down. We're on our fifth hole right now with one drill. We're just this week adding a second drill to the program. So I'm very confident we are going to hit that 40 to 45,000 feet of drilling this year by end of July. And we are targeting number one being gold. So this is about a 3 kilometer long strike length along something called the Golden Gate Fault Zone. At the south end, you've got, and it's kind of sitting behind me, but at the south end, you've got 4 gram material in at surface. At the north end, you've got 7 gram per ton gold. And we've been hitting pretty much on every hole that we've drilled. So it's pretty exciting. We're focusing right now on the south end of the Golden Gate target. We've been, we're getting some very interesting stuff coming out of the south end, and we're just going to work our way up the hill this year. So I'm pretty excited about the gold numbers that we're going to be putting out, as well as tungsten. And of course, tungsten's on everyone's tongue these days. And what's I haven't mentioned yet about Golden Gate is Golden Gate is the site of something called the Golden Gate Tungsten Mine. So Golden Gate actually produced historically from around the 1950s right up till 1980. It produced intermittently, and it produced at an average grade of about 1.8, 1.85%, which is very, you look at global tungsten mines, these are very good numbers. So another takeaway from our story is high grade. So we're pretty excited about stepping out and doing drilling around the historic tungsten mine, as well as down at the south end, where there's a very large tungsten anomaly that we're drilling as we march our way up the hill. Other thing to keep in mind when you look at Golden Gate, we've got about, when we acquired this project last year, it included some tungsten stockpiles that are at the old Johnson Creek Mill. We've also acquired that historic tungsten mill. We've acquired the stockpiles. A big part of our story is the metallurgical testing that we're doing on the tungsten. We want to take those tungsten stockpiles, get them processed, start generating a little bit of revenue to offset some of our costs. But more importantly, we want to start producing some tungsten metal that we can start sending to end users of the product. To start developing that soup to nuts supply chain. We've actually hired Steve, a guy named Adam Roper. He's a PhD metallurgist and top tier guy, and he's developing processing flow sheets for us. He's done this before. He's doing some great work there on the metallurgical testing. I mean, it's kind of people love to see drill results, and I'm an explorer. That's what I love to see. But the metallurgical side of it is a big part of our business, and it's a critical part. So the fact that we're doing this internally with an in-house PhD metallurgist should send a message to investors about what we are trying to accomplish in terms of not just doing exploration, but developing this into a production story.
So, when does Adam Roper get involved? And what so you're primarily looking at the Golden Gate right now for these drilling, right? You're not looking at the Antimony Ridge, is that correct?
Well, I should clarify that. So our current drill program is at Golden Gate. We're also going to be starting up in June some work up at Antimony Ridge. We don't have a drill permit up there yet. We filed a permit to do 250 drill holes and then a large bulk sample program at Antimony Ridge. And Antimony Ridge is actually extremely exciting from an antimony perspective. There's 3,000 feet of historic trenches that produced in the First World War, the Second World War, right through to the Korean War. And it's high grade material that produced at grades anywhere from 10% up to 50%. The best assays that we've got for antimony are about 49.5% antimony with 1400 grams per ton silver and 3 grams per ton gold. The sampling that we've done from within these trenches from rock samples that are material that's left from these high grade veins in the trenches averages 40%. You look at, next door at Perpetua, it's, less than 1%. So the high grade nature of it is getting a lot of attraction. So we're permitting to do a bulk sampling permit to go in and start stripping out some of that high grade material. And you don't have to move a lot of material to produce quite a bit of tungsten when you've got those kind of grades. And to help us with our permitting, we've actually applied for FAST 41 coverage with the Permitting Council, which is a government entity, to help implement this FAST 41 program. And 2 weeks ago, we were given FAST 41 transparency coverage by the Permitting Council. And that is just going to help streamline permitting, work to agreed timelines with the Boise National Forest, who are permitting authorities, and hopefully just keep that permitting process on track. So one of the critical things of the work that I do is helping maintain those relationships, not just with the folks in Washington, but the local folks that you're working with who are doing our permitting, and that's a critical piece of our business. So we're permitting at Antimony Ridge, and we're also on a parallel basis to the drilling that we're doing. I'm applying for a separate plan of operation, which will be approved under something called an environmental assessment at Golden Gate. And that permit will allow us to cover the entire 3 kilometer strike length with new roads, new drill sites. We'll cover 100% of that 3 kilometer strike length. So that's another key piece of our story that's it's critical to the advancement of the project is getting these permits.
Craig, last time we spoke, we looked at, I was looking at Idaho, and I looked at how rich a resources Idaho is known to be. The question mark that came up before was what about permitting? Because it's kind of been historically difficult. Could you expand a little bit more about the FAST-41 and what that allows you to do in terms of and then also in terms of roadblocks, hiccups? You talked about hitting milestones or staying on track. If you can expand on that a little bit, is there a reason to believe it might not happen? I mean, there's no guarantee, but if you can expand on the process a little bit more.
No, there, yeah. So normally when you file for a plan of operation in the US, it's typically permitted under a categorical exclusion or an environmental assessment for a drill program. If you're doing a mining program, your plan of operation is permitted under something called an EIS. And there's a whole range of steps that you go through one after the other to reach a record of decision or an approved plan of operation. And typically, historically, the permitting agencies are not held to an agreed timeline. Under FAST-41, there is an agreed timeline. It's posted on a website in Washington. Folks in Washington are looking at that regulatory regime on a daily basis. And they are, or the timelines on a daily, weekly basis, making sure that all of the parties that are involved in the permitting are keeping to that schedule. So that's what makes it, instead of being an open-ended permitting time horizon, there's an agreed schedule. So that's really the advantage of FAST-41. You've got this program in Washington that the local people adhere to. At the same time, I gotta recognize that the local permitting folks have a lot on their plates. So they've got other in the Boise National Forest, for instance, there's other projects that they are permitting. And they've also got all their other work to do, and there's manpower restrictions, et cetera, that they're facing. So we work very closely with them to do a lot of the work that they might do internally. We will bring it out to third-party contractors to help accelerate the process and keep it to those timelines. So I don't know if I'm
So,
answering your question,
well,
but
you are. I go ahead.
yeah, I was just going to say, I want to comment briefly. I mean, your comment about Idaho, and it has had a reputation going back historically that it is difficult. But at the same time, you got to understand that like Idaho is a very rich resource state. There's a long history of mining in the state. You've got the Silver Valley with high grade underground silver mines. You've got the southeastern portion of the state, very large open pit phosphate mines. You've got molybdenum, you've got copper, you've got a whole range of gold projects ourselves. You've got the Stibnite project, you've got the DeLamar project, you've got the Black Pine project operated by Liberty Gold. Exelon Resources has the Kilgore project. There's no shortage of activity in the state, and it's been accelerating. I can't really give you metrics on this, but I
No.
don't know. I've been in Idaho for 15 years doing this stuff. 10 years ago, the Idaho Mining Association had their annual convention, and you could shoot a cannon off in the middle of the ballroom, and no one was falling over. This past year, it was jam-packed with people. The energy around it was fantastic. So that organization helps support what we're doing. The government, it's a red state. They're very supportive of extractive industries. They recognize that that's a big source of state income. It's a big source of, there's a lot of manpower, and employment opportunities that come with it. The economic benefits of mining are very, very important to the state. At the same time, and I always say this, and people say it's kind of that's a motherhood statement, but every guy in this industry that I know, who's in mining, they're in exploration, they're in development, they're in mining. Everyone is out. Most people, they love hunting, they love fishing, they love camping, they love being in the outdoors. And the whole concept of responsible mining is, it's not just something that people say. People absolutely believe in it. We've all got kids. We all want to leave the world in a better place. So we do work with the communities. We do look to limit the environmental footprint, and we're doing a lot of work with the various interest groups that are opposed to this kind of thing, and working with them to address their objections and concerns in a constructive manner.
Craig, it's just for clarity's sake, the Fast 41 you said is from Washington, and you also are looking to establish a good relationship with the locals. Is the Fast 41 looked upon by the locals as something that's like going against what their wishes are? Is it received well?
That's a good question, a bit of a sensitive question, because they do have limits to the amount of bandwidth that they have for stuff. So when Washington comes down and starts, okay, we're putting some pressure on people, it gets people outside of their comfort zone, if I can use that term, Steve. But it is kind of the way of the world. Fast 41 is not was not developed by the current administration. It was actually brought out in, I think, 2015. So it's been around for a while, but the current administration is starting to implement it a little bit more. So I suspect, there is some friction there, but it's up to guys like me to work closely with the local permitting people, develop those relationships, keep everyone on side, do as much as we can to support their work and work to the timelines that they can agree and achieve.
That's great. So what kind of involvement do you have there? What are you guys actively doing? If you can paint a picture for me, how do they know you guys?
Well, how do they know us? Well, we've got a lobbyist in Washington that's helped open doors for us. We've been introducing ourselves to the Idaho Congressional delegation. We're members of the National Mining Association. We are, introducing ourselves to the folks at the Department of War who provide various levels of grant funding for critical metals projects. We've got a very good relationship with the town of Yellow Pine, which is the closest community to us, but we're also in something called Valley County. So we're looking at engaging with the Valley County commissioners, introducing ourselves to the larger communities in Valley County, McCall, Idaho, Cascade, Idaho. It's a process, and you want to put your best foot forward, and whatever you're committing to locally, you want to make sure you meet those commitments so that you develop a good, strong reputation in the community.
Craig, you mentioned the Perpetual Resources is nearby. If you can just kind of give me the implications a little bit of not only in terms of permitting, is like, have you been able to learn and draw from them? And then two, if you can give me just where you are in terms of comps, is do you see you mentioned your grade being better. Where are you with scale and in terms of market cap, do you see yourselves as a similar potential, or do you see more upside?
That's a great question. And I'm going to put my promoter hat on here a little bit, Steve, which doesn't always
Please.
sit well on my head. But I refer to horse heaven as Stibnite 2.0. And I truly believe that we've got the scale and the geologic potential to match the size of the resource that you have at Stibnite. Stibnite used to have some very high grade antimony as well, I'm assuming. A lot of that's been mined out, which is why they've got lower grade. We do have a lot of lower grade antimony as background to these high grade veins at Antimony Ridge. We're kind of a $100 million market cap, and they're over $4 billion. So
Wow.
you've got a lot of room to move from a valuation perspective. We are riding a little bit on the coattails of Perpetua in that they are spending a lot of money on infrastructure in the area. They're upgrading the road access into the town of Yellow Pine at no cost to us. We're benefiting from that.
Wow.
They're building a new power line that crosses right across the Horse Heaven project. So that is going to be of benefit to us. They've already got government support and eyeballs. So people in Washington, they're aware of Perpetua, and we're right next door to them. So there's a kind of a natural fit to ride on those coattails. We're also that the I don't want to get too much into the weeds here, but the local companies that are operating in the area are developing some, we communicate with each other on everything from some of our operating procedures to transportation in the area, doing everything we can to limit our footprint and limit the disturbance to local folks. We have a good relationship with the people at Perpetua. Great story. Great management team, really good operating people, big project. So yes, we are definitely benefiting from that. But if I'm waving the Resolution Minerals flag, this project does have real geologic potential. We've got size potential. When you're walking at Golden Gate, you're walking on a gold deposit that starts at surface, and you've got
Wow.
tungsten and you've got antimony and you've got the past production. We've got private land that we've acquired right next to the project, 25 acres, which is going to provide us a great deal of flexibility from an operational perspective because permitting is a little bit easier on private land. We're not doing drilling or exploration, but more for lay down yards, future production, putting in pilot plants, that sort of thing. We're very beneficial having some private land.
Craig, you mentioned antimony, tungsten, in addition to gold. I mean, both of antimony and tungsten, I guess outside the mining world, is not very well known, but it's like you said, it's on the tip of everyone's tongue. It's like it's super critical. And is that being, first of all, what's the right way to think of Resolution? Is it primarily a gold company, a primarily Idaho company? Is it all three, tungsten, antimony, and gold? And then, do you feel like all three of those are being priced into the market right now, or do you see upside with one of those?
We're definitely a critical metals play with a big halo of gold around us. So if you're a gold bug, there's a lot of gold out here. But we're really trying to focus on critical metals, antimony and tungsten, simply because of the acute need domestically to develop domestic supplies of these critical metals, particularly given China's attitude towards putting export controls on things like antimony. They've got a, we relied on China for too long. 80% of the
Yeah.
processing, for instance, of antimony is done in China. And when they shut down exports to the US, it creates, I don't want to say pandemonium, but there's acute awareness of this supply deficit. So there is a big push on it. It really is critical. And so we do play hard on that. I think we are very much when you if you believe this gold story that's out there, gold stories alone can carry a much larger valuation based on the type of numbers that we've been producing and where this Golden Gate story could go just as a standalone. And then you layer on the critical metals piece. It is confusing from an investor perspective because, hey, am I going into a gold company? Is it antimony? Is it tungsten? It's not a pure play antimony, pure play tungsten, pure play gold. So it is a little bit confusing. And I think that might, people are trying to understand what we're doing, but it is, it's a three-legged stool that we've got here. They're all fantastic, but in terms of, tungsten and antimony, from a U.S. government perspective, that's a big story.
Craig, I want to ask you about the NASDAQ. I know last time we spoke, you were looking at working towards a NASDAQ listing. What's the realistic time frame there? And, what still needs to happen? And why do you feel that now is the right time to pursue this?
Well, I think we're going to be through. I'm hope to be trading on NASDAQ late spring, early summer. People say Memorial Day weekend, that's the beginning of summer, so it's very, very soon. We've been at this for well over 6 months, the process of applying to NASDAQ, and it is, we're an Australian company, and the audit side of it is, IFRS and all of that, and right sizing our statements. That took some time, but we're almost there. And why the US market? This is a US-based project. We do have an asset in Australia, but we're 100% focused on the United States. We've done very well in Australia. We've raised $47 million Australian in the last 6 months. So there's appetite in Australia for this. But if we give US investors an opportunity to play in our story, above and beyond just the OTC market, which a lot of guys, that limits your investor market. When we get onto NASDAQ, a lot of funds, even larger funds, are one exposure to these critical metals. So generalist guys are, we're talking to all sorts of folks. So I think there is going to be some real attraction to what we're doing.
Craig, ever since I think I first connected with you, I don't know how many months ago. It's maybe a year. I've been intrigued by your story, especially the tungsten piece, and then learning more about the antimony and gold kicker or whichever. Pick a stool. So lots going on here. What is the? Do you have anything to look out for investors? Do you have any major timeline? What do you call it? Milestones that we should be looking for, and how do we follow your news and your story?
Well, we've applied for Fast 41 coverage for Golden Gate, so that's one thing. 40 to 45 holes we're drilling between now and August. So I think starting probably in July, you're going to get drill news right out to the end of the year from 45 holes of both gold and tungsten. We've got the NASDAQ listing, and you're going to see more stuff coming out on the kind of the downstream, upstream story where we're developing processing technologies for both tungsten and antimony. We're looking at a regional processing facility for antimony. It's going to be a news-rich cycle from here through to the end of the year from an investor perspective. So on the heels of this NASDAQ listing, there will be a lot of very good news, a lot of it from the drill bit, which is what a lot of investors want to see.
For our listeners, full disclosure, Resolution is one of our sponsors now, and we look forward to sharing your story to help to get the story out. Several of us, myself included, have invested because we do find the story there's lots to like. But we are not giving investment advice. Please do your due diligence. And one of the ways to do that is to reach out to Craig to follow their ticker. Craig, if you'd be so kind as to give us your website, how people can contact you and your ticker and your symbols one more time.
Sure. www.resolutionminerals.com is our website. You can reach me at craig@resolutionminerals.com. Always happy to take incoming emails from folks and just share a little bit more with what we're doing. Symbol in Australia, RML on the ASX, RSMIY on the OTCQB, the ADR, and we are trading symbol under NASDAQ. We've already been told it will be RML when that gets up and trading.
Awesome. Well, Craig, thanks so much for sharing your story. Look forward to seeing you again soon.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it, Steve.
Have a good one, my friend. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.